First time I say tonight, family, and my name is James, and I'm an addict. Y'all gotta excuse me, I'm still trying to breathe, you know what I'm saying? It's the first time I've ever done this, and I'm a little nervous, you know what I'm saying? Give me a couple minutes, and I'll probably loosen up. Alright, so can everybody in the back hear me? Okay, again, my name is James, I'm an addict. Yeah, family, I'm one of them guys that took a long time to get tired. I'm from Northwest Washington, D.C., and I grew up in a loving, caring family. I was raised by a single parent, my mom. My father left when I was four, around four, and I'm his namesake. I look like him, I act like him, you know, I talk like him, and I continue to hurt my mother the same way he did. And I think I did it out of spite because he really hurt my mother. And behind that, I know today that my mother loved me, but I knew back then she had a problem with knowing how to love me because I reminded her so much of the man that hurt her. You know, I'm one of them young guys that had to go through the experience of saying, "Boy, get the hell out of my face. You remind me so much of my father, I can't stand the sight of you." Stuff like that, you know. That was a very painful experience for me, you know what I'm saying? Thanks God for grandparents. Only person I could run to back then was my grandmother, you know, and my grandfather, you know, because by the time my mother and father broke up, you know, back in the 50s, you know, I'm 54 years old. People went back home, you know what I'm saying? And that's when my mother went back to Ness, you know, with me. And that's where the love started. You know, it was tough love, and it was passionate love, and then it was growing love. But that, back then, it was so confusing to me that I didn't know how to receive it because of how it came to me on certain occasions. So the only thing I can do was try to deal with my feelings the best way I know how. So as I graduated through my pain, you know, I was one of them guys. I went to Catholic school from the first to the 12th grade. I lived in the inner city. You know, a lot of guys I grew up with, you know, they didn't have a lot of things that I had. I grew up in a family where my grandfather had a very successful moving company. And, you know, on the Catholic holidays, weekends, summers, you know, when I was old enough to work for him, that's where I worked for. The part of Northwest where I lived at was downtown. And I lived close to downtown. That was my playground. I lived right around the corner from where we have a convention center right now. And that's where it all started. By the time I got to the age of 12, I was an altar boy, and that's when I found my first drug of choice. A buddy of mine named Timmy, you know, his family owned a funeral home right behind Kennedy Playground on 6th Street, and we were serving Christmas Mass, high Mass, 12 noon Mass, Immaculate Conception, and back during that time, we did Mass in Latin, and Timmy came to me, and during this time, I was kind of hyper. I was shy. You know, I was a little withdrawn, you know. But I always tried to do things to try to play around that far as acting out. But that's what I was, you know, to be honest. Okay, he brought these capsules out, and that's where it started with Buck Action. Buck Action, don't nobody know, that's heroin and a little plastic capsule that they sold for $1, you know, back in the in the 60s. And he showed me how to bust the capsule without spilling anything and putting it on my palm and taking my fingernail and snorting it. And I took my time with it, and he was trying to prove himself to me, and he did a little too much. And you know how people say when they try things for the first time they didn't feel it? I got this right off the bat. And at the age of 12, it was just what the doctor ordered. You know, all my shyness went away. You know, all my insecurities went away. You know, my hyperactiveness, you know what I'm saying? I was real hyper. I used to like to be busy all the time. I was cool as a cucumber. You know what I'm saying? You know, that was one of the best masters I served. Needless to say, my aunt Timmy doing too much. She got sick on the altar and threw up, you know, and then they had to shut my ass down for a hot second. We had to go in the back and get scolded by Father Mondale because he thought we got into the wine or something. And I had to lie because that's one thing I could do at an early age. My grandmother always told me I should be a book writer because I could lie real good and tell stories. And doing it with a straight face was the easy part. I told Father Mondale that Timmy had a stomach ache and he wasn't feeling too good at the beginning of the mass, but he said he can go with it. So we got Mark out of the order, you know, out of the pews, and we continued on with mass. And that's when my road to destruction started. You know, that buck action got me through shyness with girls, got me through puberty. It got me to the point where I can deal with my mother's way of dealing with me. By that time, you know, the best thing I can do to keep my mother off my back was to get good grades in school, you know what I'm saying? And she really wasn't on my back. It was just the fact that she was a black woman in the inner city that was a single parent. And this is what I learned over the years, that I had to play both parts, you know what I'm saying? Playing both parts of the mother and the father, and that's confusing to young black guys. I know it was confusing to me. You know what I'm saying? Where the person that the nurturing and caring is supposed to come from. You know, I was getting the stuff I should have got from my father. But I got better with it, you know, along with me getting better with knowing how to get high without nobody knowing it. By that time, I had got to high school, and it started with the intravenous drugs, and it went on. Needless to say, I still got good grades in school. I was an honor roll student from the first to the 12th grade. I got a Potts scholarship and a technical college institute in Massachusetts. My mother chose not to send me there because by that time she got hip to what I was going through. And she said, I don't care who's paying the first half, I'm not invested into the other half until you show me something. So, you know, I started off with a community college, did good. Then she took me out. I went up to Howard, and I tried. I went to high school, you know, with 300 guys. It was a Catholic high school named Mackin, and it was just 300 guys. And I got to the point where I didn't know how to study and be educated around attractive women. And I lost my way. So on breaks, he found me down to places like 7th and T, 9th and U, Florida Avenue, you know, and I flunked out. Went to the federal government, and during this time, I was at an age where I really wanted to emulate what my father was, and I was a hustler, a gambler, and a womanizer. And that was the road to my fallacies, my calamities, and my contingencies on how my life was going to be from that moment on. By the time I was 20, I had just flunked out of Howard, and I had a tragic accident. It's by no mistake that, you know, I've been washed over by God's grace all my life. I had a tragic accident at the age of 20 where I hit the bottom of a swimming pool. I fractured C6 in my spine, and I was paralyzed from my neck down. The accident happened behind an altercation I had with a guy that pulled a gun on me at the pool, and me trying to abscond from the situation, I dove in the deep end and missed it by about a foot and hit my head and was underwater and couldn't move. I stayed like this for 6 months, and this was one of the things that drug me deeper into my addiction, because I was a person that was pretty much an agile physical guy that can do a lot of things with my body, you know, sports-wise, but that kind of hindered me from a lot of things, and it depressed me. And so the only thing I knew that I can do to make me feel better was to continue to get high. And not to keep running on with the drug law, but this led me to the end, crack cocaine. Yeah. And the course of that, sum it all up. No, it took me to places, man, and it took me to doing things that I never thought I would be a part of. And at the end, I finally got tired. I tried quite a few times to recover in Washington, but couldn't do it. I think I've been in almost every detox, and a couple of treatment centers at least once or twice. And I couldn't find my way until I actually left D.C. and went across the bridge to Virginia. Backing up a little ways, you know, still covered by God's grace, another altercation with a young guy in the street, got shot down like a dog in the street, a young guy that was trying to get back at me for something. And he took 19 shots at me with a Tech-9 machine gun, hit me 4 times. A lot of the recovery that I had from my paralyzation came back, but God saw fit to give me movement again. They took a little while to put me back together, and when I came home from the hospital, I almost died from pneumonia. The doctor told me, he said, James, you gotta stop smoking what you smoke. I said, I know, doc, I need to leave them cigarettes alone. And he said, James, you gotta stop smoking more than cigarettes. He said that your lungs have abscesses on them, you know. And back during this time, you know, I consider myself fortunate that I went through, you know, the dope shooting thing, the bam shooting thing, the coke shooting thing, and never came up with abscesses. I just had a few tracks on my arm. And then I end up, you know, ironically, with abscesses on my lungs. I got 15% of my left lung tissue was gone. Yeah. So getting back to the end, at the end, when I got tired, I found ways to supply my need for narcotics, and I lived like a vampire. I only came out at night because of the things that I did, you know, at night. You know, I couldn't be seen during the daytime. You know, most of the guys that I come up with, they were either locked up with numbers that were, not numbers, but they were words, or they were dead. And the only half partner I had during that time was my father. And he would come pick me up in the morning and get my raggedy ass up, and we would pick up where we left off from the night before. Wake up with the shakes. You know, I had to get alcohol to stop my hand from shaking so I can get the quills on my nose, so I can get the blow in my nose, so I can take a blast. And I just got tired. I mean, so tired to, I still had stuff left over from the night before. And I never thought I would get that tired that I would have shit left over. And in 1994, on June the 3rd, I went to Alexandria Detox. And my life was turned around from there. Yeah. I stayed in there 27 days. I still had door keys, because my family, I come from a family that would love me to death. Even though I stole from them, you know, I disrespected, you know, all morals and principles I was raised on. I still had door keys in my parents' house. But I chose not to go back to D.C. I chose to humble myself to stay in the shelter until my bed space came up in the treatment center, where I stayed for 18 months. And here I am today. And needless to say that I am not that poster boy of Narcotics Anonymous. You know, I'm still, to this day, a little mischievous. I'm still, today, a little dishonest. But the thing that I can be honest about is my dishonesty. The thing I found out today is the only way that I can grow in this program is to be honest about the truth about myself, which I'm learning through the maintenance of this program. The thing that I'm finding out today is that as long as I deal with myself from the inside and not worry about what's going on the outside, you know, better things have happened to me, more healthier things have happened to me. I went through, toxic relationships. I went through ordeals with the police in the last 16 years. My last two felonies I got while I was clean in recovery. One, I was 2 years clean, and I worked at Hex in Tyson's Corner, and I worked on the loading dock, and I was a guy that grew uptown. I mean downtown of Washington, D.C., where all the stores were, and I could steal real good. This stuff got to the point where, I just got tired of being uncomfortable with myself. And then I just found love in somebody that I thought would love me back. And they did. I only found true love in my life like two times. And this one person, she's not here today. And I still love her too today. This ordeal that I had in 1995, it was a situation that put me out of the treatment center, put me into a Oxford house. And I began to do service. I began to do stuff like helping young guys as a mentor in certain mentoring programs. And I was trying my best to get outside of myself, to get outside of my self-centeredness. But the thing that I was lacking was love for myself. And as long as I was BSing with the maintenance of the program, this stuff kept continuing. And the only thing I was looking for was euphoric things that made me feel better about myself. And the thing that I found out, that I had no urge to use narcotics anymore, but I found a way to use people, places, and things. And it led me down another path of self-destruction, but not as bad as the one that I left that I was tired of. But it was one that I was robbing myself of my own successes through my fears. And the thing that took me to where I am today is the fact that I was being very fearful of being honest with what was going on with me. I didn't want to share it with nobody because I went through like my first phase of 12 steps in the post-treatment program. I did it not with a sponsor, but I did it with a so-called quote-unquote therapist. And this guy, he considered me like a hard nut to crack. And what he did, all the things, the gory details of my fourth step, he used it against me in public, in encounter groups. And it created a trust issue with me where I withdrew from, my maintenance of the program. And the only thing I did, I just went to meetings. I read the literature. I did step work, but I just kept it to myself. I had a trust issue with men. As far as them knowing, what was going on with me, the only guys I dealt with were guys I had stuff in common with. And the only thing I did was enjoy the fact that I was rejoined with my family again. Okay, and needless to say, you know what the outcome was, because if you don't change something, then nothing's going to change. So later on, in this relationship that I was in, I was one of those guys that wasn't fearful about a lot of risky things or edgy things, because I was used to living on the edge. And the woman I fell in love with was a woman that had a condition that was life-threatening. I'm one of those guys that, I fell in love with a woman that had the virus. And I had a sponsor, I still have him today, at that time that was, he was director of our HIV and AIDS outreach program, and he taught me all the ins and outs of how to deal with this, and he sponsored me through this. And the way I looked at it optimistically is that, you know, I don't have to worry about where the virus is because I already know where it is. It's been bestowed upon the woman that I love, and she protected it from me for 9 years. In the course of knowing stuff about myself, when I started picking back up my step work, I found out that I was a caretaker, that my self-esteem was lower than the footprint of a polar bear in soft snow, you know, that my self-centeredness was a selfishness that I camouflaged with my humanity. You know what I'm saying? I would be humane to you as long as you would do what I wanted you to do, and when you didn't, I had a problem with it. And my humanities found out they weren't really humanities. I had to get honest about that, and the only way I can get honest with myself was with the contingencies of how my spiritual condition was. And when my spiritual condition got to the point where I could get honest, I found out that I was codependent, and the part that I played in a lot of relationships was the martyr. That I would take on your feelings and I would jeopardize mine for the sake of not hurting you. And I put myself in a lot of jeopardy, and that's when I got my second felony. And my second felony put me in handcuffs once again. And I went to Fairfax County Jail for distribution, possession with the intent to distribute in two different substances. And only by God's grace, I got out of a 40-year sentence with 10 months. It was the hardest 10 months I ever did, you know, from all the time I did, because I had to listen to somebody that I love tell me, James, I'll be glad when you come home. And because they're not treating me right here. And I was a caretaker. And I used to bathe her, feed her, you know, clean her, everything right before I left. And she got worse. And a few months before I got out, she passed. So now, I'm left with me, and I'm left with a lot of feelings that, you know, that and regrets that I have about me doing stuff different. But the best thing about it is that the fact that I know I have a God that will get me through anything, and no matter what, I don't have to use. And since 1994, June 3rd of 1994, I haven't found it necessary to use. But I'm finally feeling the urge to want to honestly recover the way I should have been doing all along. I know it's not no hell of a success story, but somebody got to tell it. You know, I'm not going to stand up here and be dishonest about the truth about myself, because as long as I'm doing that, that's going to be partaking of the biggest robbery I ever, you know, embarked on in my life. And that's what I've been doing for a while. Today, I'm still a successful person on my job. You know, I'm one of the leaders of my family. I have no kids, and I love kids, and I'm a godfather. I got about like 12 god kids, and love them all. But the main thing I got to work on today is loving myself. And where I'm at today is the spiritual self-love. You know, the part I play in anything that I do is always contingent upon my spiritual condition and how honest I'm willing to be according to my truth. You know, anything that I do, you know, I can't blame it on anybody but myself. You know what I'm saying? It begins and ends with me, you know, through them three dimensions. You know what I'm saying? And it all depends on how well my trinity is lined up, my mind, body, and spirit. Some days it's lined up, some days it's not. But for the most part, when it is lined up, you know, I make some of the healthy decisions that, you know, I make, you know, on my day-to-day basis. And the days that I don't, I'm liable to do, you know, the things that we do as addicts. You know how we go to work, you know, and don't clock in the way we're supposed to clock in, or clock out the way we're supposed to clock out, you know, stuff like that. And it leads to other stuff, you know what I'm saying? Y'all know the snowball effect and the parts we play and, you know, and our dishonesty, you know what I'm saying? But as long as I'm willing to be honest about the truth that's going with me, you know, I got a chance. You know, I'm really uncomfortable because of the simple fact that this is the first for me. I never left out of go-go. You know, and came to a meeting, you know what I'm saying, and said, you know, I was wound up when I came in here. And then I seen all the people in here, I said, see your people, and then I said, wow. You know, but that's where I'm at. You know, thank God for you people and this program, because without it, I wouldn't be here today. You know, if life was fair, I wouldn't have been here a long time ago. You know, I love y'all. I try to do as much as I can for people, you know, with no strings attached. And when I don't, I know I always pay a consequence for it. Because anytime I don't, you know, I always end up messing up the natural order of how life is supposed to be. Yeah. So, I'm not going to ramble on, you know. That's pretty much where I'm at. That's pretty much where I've been through. I'm really enjoying this this convention. It's the first convention I've been to down in Ocean City in quite a few years, because after my partner passed, you know, I kind of shut down on traveling and doing stuff, you know, because that was my yin, you know what I'm saying? And I'm still recovering from that. My name is James, and I'm an addict, and thanks for letting me share.